and welcome to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. My name is Sean Delaney, and each week at this time I introduce you to ideas and people to stimulate your thinking about aspects of education. You can listen back to hundreds of previous episodes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the podcasts tab. This week on the programme I'm speaking to an education researcher from the Netherlands who studies teacher educators. She's interested in the work and identities of teacher educators, how they act as models, and about the theory and practice of becoming a teacher educator. Just like we think about teaching as a profession, this week's guest sees teacher education as a profession. Her name is Anja Svennen, and she's a member of the Faculty of Psychology and Education at the University of Amsterdam. I met up with her at the annual meeting of the Association for Teacher Education in Europe last August in Sweden. I began our conversation by asking Anja what induction teacher educators need in order to become competent in their work and how this differs from the needs of teachers.
Teacher educators work in teacher education, in primary teacher education, secondary teacher education. And very often people think as teachers, but they are something different than the teachers they teach, because they are the teachers of the teachers. And Jean Murray, she works at the University of East London, she made a very clever distinction between what teachers are and what teacher educators are. She says teachers are first order practitioners, and that means they teach the subject to their students. And it's not being first or second order, we'll come to the second order, is not being better than the other. Like a professor in chemistry at the university is a first order teacher, because he teaches the subject to his students. But a teacher educator, she says, is a second order practitioner. They teach about teaching. So they are teachers, and they talk about how you become a teacher with their students. And this means that they are a specific professional group within education. That's why I think they need a specific induction.
And before you continue, Anja, would you count somebody who offers professional development for teachers but who is not based in a university? Are they teacher educators?
That's an interesting question, because some people say not. I say yes, they are, because in that case too, they are second order. So also these people who offer professional development have to think about what does it mean to teach about teaching, in a very broad sense, to teach about teaching. Yes, indeed.
So what are their needs then in terms of induction into their career?
Interesting, it is very often a second career, because they were teachers, mostly in schools, and then they become teacher educators at the university. It's not sometimes the academics who become teacher educators, but very often in the United Kingdom and in the Netherlands, people were teachers first and then teacher educators. So it's a career move later in life. As teachers, they were experts. But as teacher educators, they are novices again. So they have to learn that profession. And what they have to learn is, what does it mean to work with people who want to become a teacher? What does it mean to help students to learn their subject, history or geography or whatever? That may be part of it. But also, how can I, as teacher educator, help my students to teach geography? And that is not an easy task. And there is very, very little induction about that.
And not only is there very little induction, but how does somebody even decide that they are suitable to be a teacher educator? Or how are teacher educators selected?
I hope the readers hear this. This is the knock on the door. And someone wrote a very interesting article about it. And she says, when you become a teacher educator, it's almost as knocking on the door. They say, okay, come in. Very often, teachers who become teacher educator, they are good teachers. They are often mentors in their schools, so they have some experience with student teachers. And then someone from the Teacher Education Institute says, oh, we need a teacher education for this or that. Maybe that's something for you. Maybe you are a good person. And they say, well, why not? Well, have a talk with the head. And they have a talk with the head, and then they become a teacher educator. It's not always like this, of course. but it is not unusual.
So if you were recruiting somebody to be a teacher educator for your institution, what are you looking for in that person?
Of course, it has to be a good teacher. Being a model for your student teacher, you have to be a good teacher. Also, even if they have no idea about teaching or second order teaching or modeling or whatever, if we talk about it, I would want them to say, yes, this is what I think is important. You are right, it's about teaching. So the idea that it is more than just teaching a subject, that they have an idea about that, I think that I would find that very important for future teacher educators.
You've hired the person and you've decided that, yes, this person has potential. What kind of support do they need then to grow into the profession?
We did some research within ATE about induction of teacher educators. And what we found was very important is to have a mentor as experienced teacher educator. So they are novice, they come into the profession, and there is someone older and wiser and with more experience who helps them on a daily basis. Because most of the time there is no course for teacher educators, especially not when they are very young. There are very few courses in the world, so you can't expect that. But someone who helps them to be this second order practitioner, that is very, very important. Because then they learn straight on, it's not just the teaching, it is the teaching about the teaching. So an experienced mentor. But if possible, I would send them to a course. As it happens, we have such a course at our university.
So what's the curriculum for that course?
Yeah, we do a lot about pedagogy for teacher educators. So what does it mean to be a good teacher educator?
So how is the pedagogy for teacher educators different to the pedagogy for teaching children?
Again, it is about the second order qualities, but we use very much the idea of modeling. So as a teacher educator, you have to model good teaching, but also you have to model your own vision. Say, for instance, you say to your students, you have to be child-centered. That's a normal thing teacher educators would say. Are you modeling student-centered education? Because we think that is very important. It's called modeling, and I've also called it congruent teacher education. So you're congruent with what you tell others what to do. So I tell you what to do as my student, but I show you also what to do. And that is not so easy. So you can have a theory about it in the course, and you can have practicum and try to train this together, talk about it, reflect about it, see how difficult it is. Because it's not easy.
Okay, so I interrupted you. You were talking about the curriculum in the teacher education program in your university. So one area is pedagogies. So what are the other areas?
A large part is about doing practice-based research, because we think that is very important as well. School teachers, as a rule, do not do much research yet. That is, of course, developing. But as a teacher educator, you work in higher education, so you have to do practice-based research to develop your own skills and your own research skills, to know more about your area or teacher education, your subject, whatever. We had another part, which is typical maybe for the Netherlands, and that is that we prepare them for what we call the registration of teacher education. So teacher educators can register as teacher educator, and they do so in the Association of Teacher Educators. For that, they have to write a kind of self-study biography. They have to choose areas for improvement. They have to work together with other teacher educators of their own institute, or maybe they meet other teacher educators during the course, and they work on this improvement, and they have to write reflection about this improvement. Can be all kinds of things. And they have some other assignments around this.
That's interesting, because in Ireland we have a teaching council for teachers, but we don't have such an organization for teacher educators.
No. And that's almost unique to the Netherlands. Belgium has an association. Hungary has an association for teacher educators.
And is it a requirement that every teacher educator in the Netherlands is a member?
No. No. In the Netherlands, I don't think we like this kind of requirements. A few years ago, or almost 10 years ago, the government gave the Association for Teacher Educators money, a nice sum, and they had some project managers. And these project managers, together with teacher educators, developed standards. And together they developed the pathway to registration. And it's very important for the teacher educators to have this. It's the association of teacher educators. Not for, but of the teacher educators themselves.
So that means that they have autonomy in terms of how the association is run?
Yeah, absolutely. It's their association. And that would be, I think, the fourth element of professional development is to send teacher educators as soon as possible to the conferences, in this case, the Dutch Association of Teacher Educators, could be the Irish one if it would exist, of course, but also to the ATEE, where we are now. Because here you meet other teacher educators. Yes.
You've written also about the identity of teacher educators.
Yes.
Can you say a little bit about that?
We made a distinction between four different aspects of the identity of teacher educators. And I think in the end there are five. I think at that time, it's almost 10 years ago when you started, I forgot one very important one. Because teacher educators teach about one subject. So for them, their identity as historian or pedagogue or geography or mathematics or whatever is also very important. But interesting enough, in the literature, it was not mentioned very often. And still, I think it's important. If you listen to people talking here, they identify very much with their subject. So that's one thing. The other thing is, of course, the second order practitioner. You are the teacher of the teachers. You're the teacher of the teachers. And that brings the whole idea of a pedagogy of teaching, of modeling, that is, I think, the second identity. And to me, the most important. But people may disagree with that. We also identified an identity, and that is to be a teacher in higher education. Because teacher educators often come from schools, primary or secondary. For a long time, they feel as if they are teachers. Slowly but surely, they become teacher educators, teachers of teachers, but they are also teachers in higher education. So it means that they have there's a different context, an academic context, with research and conferences and international collaboration and what have you. And they have to get used to that very much, because the context of the schools is very small, very secure, closed, and now they come into this very different world. So that is also, so the world of the researcher is also very important. And then, it is the last in how I mention it, but it is also very important. A teacher educator is a teacher. In the end, you are a teacher. A special kind of teacher, but you are a teacher. And most teacher educators were teachers, and they treasure that identity of being a teacher. And it's special because they are what their students will be. Or maybe sometimes even are already, because sometimes they teach. And it's the only profession in which the educators are what the students will become. Because if you are an educator of cooks, they will become cooks. You may also be a cook, but in this constellation of education, you're the educator. And that's different for teachers. So that's also very important. But you, as a teacher educator, you are no longer a teacher in primary or secondary education. You left that profession for a new profession, but you take all these experiences to support your students because you know what it means to be a teacher. So that's also very important.
And although teacher educators may have those ideas going around in their heads vaguely, how important is it for them to be aware of them explicitly? Those various components of their identity, of their new identity.
I think very important. More even than teachers who have textbooks and standards and have all kinds of written requirements for their students and pupils. For teacher educators, this doesn't really exist. And teacher educators, to become professional teacher educators, you have to know that you have these now five different identities, but that they are in you. Of course, it's one teacher educator, and that you can use them in the right moment. So sometimes you are more a researcher who looks at your own work, and then you visit a student in schools, and you use your experience as a teacher, but with the lens of a teacher educator. How can I help this student to develop in a good way?
You've already mentioned practice-based research as something that teacher educators will typically engage in. Can you say a little bit about that kind of research and, you know, what is special about it?
What is very important, if you have a traditional researcher at the university, their main task is research. They have very often research traditions, they're very rigorous, they know everything about their subject, they know all the other researchers. Teacher educators teach. A lot of time of teacher educators is involved in direct teaching, visiting students in school, talking to students about their problems, managing practice placements, what have you. So their work is much more, for a researcher only does one or two things, and the teacher educators do a lot of different things. And from minute to minute or hour to hour, the work can change. So there is not much time for research. Research is hardly ever the core of their work. So John Loughran and Tom Russell, they came up with the idea of self-study. They started it. And for teacher educators. The concept was known for teacher educators. So if you are so busy and have so many different tasks and you have to attend to so many different needs of people, why not study your own work? You have to do it anyway. And the only thing you have to do is to see to it that you read about the theme you have chosen within your work, that you collect data on the way, and that you are able to write it down. Difficult enough, but it's better than do a research which is unconnected to your work, because you just don't have the time for it very often.
And is there a risk, though, that if you're only studying yourself, that your research could actually become quite narrow then?
Very much. That's why people always have to go to conferences and share their work. Read about your theme. Say, I have a colleague and she wants to do more about diversity in her own classroom as teacher educator. She thinks that's important. But she reads about it and she collects the data of herself in the classroom. Then she shares her research at a conference and people have input on her own research. And next year, she wants to improve this research. She wants to do it again or a little bit different. So it becomes richer. The longer she does it, it becomes more theorized. She becomes connected with other ideas. Very often at a conference like this, well, you've seen it, how many people know each other and become friends or good colleagues. And you could work together with one or two or maybe a group of people about diversity in classrooms of teacher educators. So yes, not only narrow-minded, but look for other people to work with. It's a joy as well.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah.
And is practice-based research, is that a method in itself, or is it an approach that other methods inform?
Of course, yeah. But it's on the whole very qualitative. Of course, you could collect quantitative data, but it doesn't always say so much to improve your own. Because practice-based research is not only to inform yourself, but often also to innovate yourself or innovate your institution or innovate the collaboration with schools. Or there are so many themes you can investigate, but I think they use the methods of qualitative research.
And of course, some teacher educators then will research other things. They may not study themselves, but they may, for example, study in relation to their subject area, you know, looking at that at school level, for example.
Yes, of course. Yes. I always find that a little bit difficult. I think you have to be aware, if you study teachers in their schools, you have to do it in a way that will support the teachers and not in a way that you only study teachers. Maybe I can give an example.
Sure.
If I look at the university, we have all kinds of important professors at the university. They think of a new way of teaching mathematics. They make a whole plan. They go to a school. The teachers have to do it. When the teachers succeed, the professors say, wow, look at me, what an excellent plan of innovation I've made. If the teachers don't do it right, they say, look, I have an excellent plan, but, you know, the teachers don't do it. That is not what I think should happen. So if teachers would have a problem and say, we are not happy with the way we teach mathematics, for instance, in our diverse classrooms, which can be a challenge, could you help us? And let's do research around it. You can use it for your article. We are happy because we improve our teaching, or maybe we could even do the research together. That is what I like most, when people do it together.
Collaboration.
The collaboration. But the day before yesterday, David Powell and I talked about brave research. It needs some bravery from both sides to really, really collaborate. And not only the teachers for the data and the researchers who make nice articles out of it, but I think that would be a good thing. So that's why I'm a little bit hesitant when teacher educators go into schools and study what's happening in schools.
But it also shows the need for some kind of collaboration between teacher educators and teachers, because teachers can't identify problems they have and that they'd like to explore unless there's some route of communication for them.
Absolutely. You're from Ireland, of course, but in England specifically, they have a strong collaboration between schools and teacher education. And in the Netherlands, we have too. I like the system in the Netherlands very much because the schools are a real partner in this and not only someone to collaborate with. You know, there's a real partnership. And in these partnerships in the Netherlands, schools and teacher education institute into some kind of academic combination, academic schools, where teachers and teacher educators and university researchers do research together. So it is happening at the moment,
yes.
In a good way, in a very good way.
You are known for your study of history of education. Can you say a little bit about what history of education as a lens offers to teachers, and maybe to teacher educators, but teachers specifically, as a way of understanding their work?
First of all, it's fun. Because if you know about history, you know where you come from as a profession. And if you know that, for instance, teacher education for a long time was taught in schools. You know, the head teacher had his own school, and a teacher worked there as an apprentice. Assistant, we called it in the 17th century. And so they learned the trade, the profession, from the head teacher. And this developed slowly but surely. Nowadays, we still think that learning to be a teacher in school is very important. Now we call it professional development schools. But in the 18th century, we also called it professional development schools. So it's interesting.
History repeats itself.
In a different way, of course, it's very different. So I think I think everybody should know where they come from. It's like knowing your own history, or maybe knowing the history of your father and mother, who you are. So that's important. But also, just the other day, I read about education, and someone said, yes, it's a novel. When I went to school, I learned reading with specific words. Do you learn reading with specific words when you are a child? You're 6 years old and you learn your first words?
Yes, the look-say words, the sight vocabulary, it's called.
Yeah, so we learn with Rick, vis, maan. These are words that are very easy because they are in written language the same as in spoken language. So all six-year-old children learn these words for the first time. There was a different system until about the Second World War, maybe, but not after that. Many people know the old system because there are nice, they make charts out of them, you know, they use them for advertisements, the old ones. And in their memory, people think they learn to read and write in the old system. But that's not true. And if you know the history of writing and reading, you know that system was out of place, I think even in the 30s. So it's interesting to see what happened in schools and also what it means to be a modern teacher.
You started off your answer to that question by saying that it's fun. How do you bring history of education to life for your students?
I don't teach in that way. So my students are mostly teachers at the university. So they're grown people. And I do...
They're practicing teachers, are they?
Yeah, they're practicing teachers. Yes. So they have their PhD and they work at the university. So that's what I do for money. And next to that, I do my research. So I'm not introducing really my student teachers to the history. I think they should. They should learn more than just being a practicing teacher.
And that wish for teachers to learn more history of education came from Anja Svennen from the University of Amsterdam, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. I'll bring you more from Anja on next week's programme, and I spoke to Anja Svennen at the annual meeting of the Association for Teacher Education in Europe in Sweden last August. I want to thank David Powell for his help in setting up the interview. You can listen back to podcasts of previous programmes by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available directly from the publisher, Routledge, or from any online bookstore. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Have a great week.